I never strive to be the best parent in the world. I simply strive to be the best parent I can. That's all God ever asks. He has never once asked me ever to be the best parent in the world. He's asked me to give it the best shot through the power of the Holy Spirit and leave the results to Him. And I want to say this, and this is important. I believe you could be the finest parent in the world. You could do everything right, everything. And your child could still look you square in the eye and say, I hate you. I believe you'd be the most godly parent in the face of the earth. I mean, look at God. He was the father to Israel. You couldn't have asked for a better father. And Israel turned their back on him. What I'm going to share tonight doesn't guarantee success, doesn't guarantee how our children are going to turn out, but it will do this. It'll give you a fighting edge. In the world we live in today, we better be looking for that edge. And so the things that I share tonight are not foolproof answers, but I know if you apply them, it'll give you a bigger edge with your children, and the cause of Christ will be better off. How to be a hero to our children. Now, the first point I'm going to start out with tonight is probably not what you expected, but it's where I have to start because it's where I believe the problem starts often and where the answer always has to start. In Ephesians chapter 5, we'll start, verse 28 says, so husbands ought also to love their own wives. And in verse 33 it says, you also love his own wife even as himself. Let each individual among you also love his own wife as himself. And in that context, we go into chapter 6. Children, obey your parents. Children, obey your parents. Before God gave us the admonition for our children to obey us as parents, He gave the admonition, fathers, love your children's mother. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, respect your husband, verse 33. I've heard so many sermons on children, obey your parents. But I've never, now I know there's many been given, but I've never heard one on verse 4, and fathers, do not provoke or exasperate your children to anger. I've never heard a sermon on that. And I'm sure many have been given, I just haven't had a chance to hear them. Because most parents don't want to hear that one, they want to hear children, obey your parents. The first step in being a hero to your children, do not exasperate your children. Colossians 3, write down, Colossians 3, 19 to 21. Is a very similar passage here. In verse 21 there it says, fathers, do not exasperate your children, which means to cause them to lose heart. And when they lose heart, then they're easily provoked to anger. One of the first ways to keep from exasperating our children and to cause them to lose heart is, husbands, love your wives. On Good Morning America, David Hartman was interviewing Dr. Salk, the family psychologist. And he asked Dr. Salk two very profound questions. He said, Dr. Salk, is everyone born with a capacity to love? And Dr. Salk said, yes. And then the profound question. He said, then Dr. Salk, why don't we have more love in the world? Did you ever think about that? If everyone is born with a capacity to love, why don't we have more love in the world? The very wise answer. Dr. Salk said, David, even though we're born with a capacity to love, we need to learn how to love. Then he looked into the eye of the camera, and he said, the greatest thing you parents can do for your children is to love each other. To love each other. When most of us here were growing up, one of our greatest securities came from knowing our parents loved us. That's not true anymore. Now it comes from this, and as parents, we better realize it. One of the greatest securities of a child today is not knowing so much that my parents love me, but that my parents love each other. You say, why? Because of the fear of divorce. But research shows the number one desire of a lower age teenager, that's 13, 14, 15, number one desire is a happy home life. Do you know what the number one fear is? The loss of a parent through divorce. The loss of a parent through divorce, the number one fear. It goes all the way down about 7, 8 years old. My son Sean came home from school when he was 6. And he wasn't quite himself. And I said, what's wrong, buddy? He said, nothing, Dad. We got fairly good communication. I said, come on, share with me. What are you feeling? You know what I've learned? If I want to know what's going on in my kids' life, I don't ask them what they think. I ask them what they feel. So I said, son, what are you feeling? And he looked at me, rather puzzled, and he said, Daddy, are you going to leave Mommy? I'd been waiting for that question. I said, why? Why'd you ask that question? 3 of his friends' fathers had just divorced their mothers. And a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old cannot discern the difference. And it's happening so much today in culture that a child is growing up, no matter how secure my home life is, there's going to come a time when my dad's going to leave my mom. See, when most of you grew up here, your parents worried about you. Now the kids worry about the parents. Kids can't handle that. This is why I say one of the first steps to being a hero to your children is to love their mother. And I sat my son down when he asked me that question if I was going to leave his mother. And I said, young man, I want your attention. I said, I'm one of the luckiest men in the face of the earth to be married to your mother. I said, I love your mother. I am committed to your mother. And then I raised my voice and I said, mister, I will never leave your mother, period. And that little 6-year-old went, oh, thanks, Dad. Did my son need to know that I was committed to him? No. He needed to know I was committed to his mother. One of the first steps that I took to not exasperate my children in loving their mother was I made myself accountable to my wife. You're supposed to be the spiritual leader of the house. Well, I know it. My wife knows it, and I am. And because of that, I can make myself accountable. Because the Bible teaches servant leadership. Servant leadership, the Bible talks. Christ led by serving. And I said, honey, I want you to keep me accountable. If I'm not spending time with you, if I'm not meeting your needs, if I'm not listening to you, if I'm on the road too much, if I get upset or anything, please tell me. And you know, she did. But you know, as a father and a husband, that helped me. Because the one person that's most blind about me is me. I can't see the shortcomings of my life as a father and a husband as much as my wife can. And when I made myself accountable to my wife, I found out that she'd let me know, and then I had to respond, because about the second or third time I didn't respond, that was it. She wasn't going to speak up anymore. She's going to become like so many women, silent. Holding yourself accountable to your wife. And then something that I try to do all the time is communicate to my kids or do things that show them I love their mother. One thing I did was, several years back, I ran out of creative ideas for my anniversary. I mean, you have only so many things you can think up, and I just couldn't come up with any creative ideas. So I got my children together, and I said, kids, at that time my oldest daughter was 10 and Sean was 8. Now they're 13 and 11. And I said, kids, I need your help. I said, I'm one of the luckiest men alive to be married to your mother. We got an anniversary coming up, and I explained again what an anniversary was. And I said, I've run out of ideas. What can I do? What can I do to show your mom I love you? I'm committed to you. Thank you for being my wife. And my daughter instantly spoke up and said, take her to the beach. So I called up to Surf and Sand up in Laguna. And I said, I might as well go first class. So I called him up and I said, do you have a room such and such 2 nights, Saturday, Sunday, right out in the water, not in the water, facing it, you know. And then my daughter also said, what? Mom loves swordfish. Next to sitting down talking over a cup of coffee, it's eating swordfish. I said, that's a great idea. So I called up my favorite restaurant in all the world, the Boardwalk, up in Laguna Beach. I've written many of my books there, sat at their table for hours. They all knew me. And I called up. And my kids, right there, so they heard it. And I explained to the maitre d' how fortunate I am to be married to my wife and everything. And that I was wondering if on that Saturday night, if he made sure they had swordfish and would set aside a special table and everything else. And then my son says, yeah, but mommy likes spaghetti. He said, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. And I called up Salerno's with my kids right there. And I said, look, on Sunday night, I didn't tell him I was eating somewhere else on Saturday night. I said, on Sunday night, part of Sunday night, I'm going to be celebrating part of my anniversary. And my wife loves spaghetti. And I said, would you set aside a special table? And said, I found out restaurants love that. But you know, later what I realized, and I didn't do it for that, but I realized later, I was reinforcing the principle, husbands love your wives. And I was doing it in the presence of my children. And now it becomes an annual event. Including my children into birthdays, anniversaries, Christmas. It's fantastic. And now I like to get them together, take them out for lunch or dinner, just alone with them. Say, you know, kids, what can I do with your mom for Christmas? What can I do to show her that I love her? Then something else, and you can do this around Valentine's Day, and in other words, get a lot of supplies for it. Around Valentine's Day, I'll go down to the Hallmark stores, and I'll get these love coupons. I get little coupons at those times, you know, for Valentine's Day, and you tear the coupon out, and you give it to your mate, and it says, you know, a night out with your mother-in-law, and I won't complain, or a night to the ballet, or the opera, or something else. And I'll get these love coupons, and then I'll get a whole bundle of the stickers, the real mushy love stickers and everything. Anything I can find that communicates love and romance and everything else, and I'll get a sack of it that I can use the whole year. And then what I do is often I left, like in the last trip I did it, all over the house, I put love stickers, little coupons on them. And I'll put one on the pillow and put a coupon there and fix the bed back up. Put one in their bathrobe, one in the mirror, put one in the shower spigot. First time I did, I went in, I put one in the milk, one in the cheese, one in the butter. And the next morning, my wife didn't see it, my kids knew it was there, and the next morning, the kids could hardly wait to see their mom open the refrigerator. And my son was out there first, and he wanted a glass of milk, and he says, Mom, will you give me a glass of milk? She said, if you want milk, get your own, son. Sometimes my wife's not very spiritual. She says the same thing to me. I learned not to ask, just go get it. And then he finally talked her into it. She opened it up. Ah, wow. My wife knows how to go, ah, that's great. And my kids were all just smiles. What was it doing? My kids were seeing me in a visible way saying to my wife, I love you. Thanks for being my wife. And it reinforced a security for my children that I am committed to their mother. And then discipline. My oldest daughter, boy, she went through a time from about 9 to 11 where she could sass her mother. Ooh-wee. And my wife said, she came to the point, she said, honey, sometimes I'm just like this. And I just want to get out of the room sometimes. What do I do? And we read every book, everything you're supposed to do, and nothing worked. Finally, one day I was home, and I caught her sassing her mother. I grabbed her by the shoulder, spun around, got down on my knees, so I was eyeball to eyeball. And I said, young lady, you might talk to your mother that way, but I'll never let you talk to my wife that way. I love that woman over there. Unbelievable. It worked. We read everything, a la Dobson, everything. Nothing worked. And not long back, my daughter started to sass my wife. She stopped, turned around, looked at me and said, oh, Daddy, I can't do that to your wife, can I? I said, no. But see, at the same time, I was saying, I love that woman. I'm committed to that woman. And then last year, I told my wife, we were talking, I said, you know, honey, if I had my life to live all over again, I would choose you to be my wife without a moment's hesitation. I wouldn't even have to pray about it. As I went to bed, almost every night when I'm home, I go to bed with my children. And we take about an hour and a half, 2 hours from about 6:30 to 8:30. Phone is unhooked usually, and we just get in and have a great time. Maybe we watch television, try it out, guess some of the game shows. Maybe we pray together, read the Bible, maybe play King of the Mountain. I got all the kids, we were all in bed, all five of us, four kids and myself, and I said, you know, kids, I want to relate to you something I told your mother today. I told your mom today, if I had it to do all over again, to live my life all over again, I would choose your mother to be my wife without a moment's hesitation. And my 7-year-old went, really, Dad? I said, yeah. And I said, you know what, Katie? I would choose you all to be my kids, too. Boy, I got some of the biggest hugs from them. But reinforcing the principle, husbands, love your wives. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. One of the fastest ways to exasperate your children, to cause them to lose heart, even to bring them to anger, is for a father not to love their mother. It's one of the fastest ways. You say, yeah, Josh, but you travel a lot. But you know, I found that if you really work at it, you can apply the principle when you travel, even when you just go to work every day, when you call home. When I'm on the road and I call home, like recently my 7-year-old answered, my little blue blonde-eyed Katie, and I talked to her for a little bit and I said, Katie, I sure want to talk to your mom. Is that fantastic woman that I'm married to there? Is that woman that I get to have as my wife there? Every time I call home, I think of something I can say to my children when I'm on the phone with them. And maybe it's just, Kelly, before you go to bed tonight, you go out to the kitchen and tell your mom that I love her. And just leave it at that. But it reinforces it. Husbands, love your wives. You could take Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, verses 28 to 31. Read it to your children. And it says this, her children rise up and bless her. Her husband also, and he praises her. She shall be praised. And the first time I went over this with my children, I said, children, tonight at the dinner table, I want each one of us to think how we can praise your mother, my wife. I want you to think of something that we can bless her with, that we can praise her to the utmost for being my wife and being your mother. And then at the table, but we eat, say, honey, we all got something to say to you. And we go around, we read this, and then we go around the table and we praise her. But what does this do? Communicates to my children, I'm committed to your mother. And I know one thing, kids can't hear too much of that in today's world. I asked some wives how their husband shows them that he loves them. Let me read some of that list. My husband initiates family devotions. He shows me he loves me by initiating conversation on a deeper level. A tasteful public display of affection, a wink, a little pat on the shoulder, eye contact. Verbalizing to the family that my wife is a special person. Does something with me that I like to do that he doesn't like to do. Go to the opera, ballet. I gave my wife one of the love coupons. It says one night at the ballet. It's still, 3 years later, it's still on the mirror in our bedroom. Because she said, honey, I know how hard that was for you to give that to me. She said, I'll never cash it in. Another, quick to forgive. Make sure that I have time for myself. Holds me accountable. Special surprises and gifts. He remembers special days. Listens with eye contact, silence, and remembers what I said. Values my feelings. Oh, this is good. My husband shows me he loves me by valuing my feelings, even if they're not rational or logical. He shares his feelings with me. He demonstrates trust in me. He loves our kids, notices the little things they do, notices the way I look and dress, compliments me on the day-to-day things, like vacuuming. Helps me with routine tasks like cleaning the table. He babies me when I'm sick. He initiates and takes care of an entire date. He gives me an X amount of money of ours to use for whatever purpose over and above the budget. He communicates. He listens to my needs and my schedule. He asks for my opinions and considers them carefully. He listens to long stories. I mean, that's got to be love. Expresses his love in words romantically when alone together. Has love and interest in my family. He is sensitive to my mood and encourages me and says something kind. First step, husbands, love your wives. Then, to fathers, do not exasperate your children. The next step is to show an unconditional acceptance or a conditionless acceptance. When you know you're accepted by someone, what does that give you? A sense of what? A sense of security. Now think that through. When you know that you are accepted unconditionally, you have a real sense of security. And this is what our children find. Where we communicate, we're with you, we're for you, regardless of what happens, I'm with you. And we'll see it through together. I love you. One of the greatest demonstrations of love is when we can communicate to our children, I am committed to you to work it through. Regardless of what happens, I love you, you're my son, you're my daughter, and we'll work it through together. This applies, say, in your kids playing baseball or soccer. You ever taken your son out for a special ice cream sundae after what? After what? Speak to me. At the ball game, after he does what? Gets a home run. They win. We take him out for ice cream. You know when I take my son out for ice cream? When he loses. I don't want to build my son up where he thinks his acceptance with me is based on his success. I want it to be based on his effort. Effort is more important than success. Somehow we think failing in something is morally wrong. It's not. There's nothing immoral, nothing about sin in failing. Failing can be just as important as winning or succeeding. Look at Babe Ruth. He's remembered for the home runs. But do you realize for him to get those home runs, he also broke the strikeout record. He struck out more times that year than any man in history. My daughter reminded me the other day that Edison, in creating the light bulb, failed 900 and some times. 900 and some failures. And then he created the light bulb. 900 some times it didn't work what he tried. But he had the effort. We need to praise our children for their effort, not so much their successes. This last year, my son plays in the Ramona League. And at the beginning of the season, I went for all the kids on the team, there were about 14 of them. I went and bought coupons, gift certificates for ice cream sundaes at the Julian Antique Drugstore and soda fountain. I went down and gave it to the coach. And I said, Coach, I'd appreciate if you'd give this to the team after their first loss. He said, what? He said, I want to give it to them after they win. I said, no. Give it to them after. And then I explained some of the things I shared here. And he did it. It was about the fifth game before they lost, and I think he was so tempted every game to give out that coupon. But think when you take your son or your daughter play soccer, baseball. You go to the ball game with your son, let's say, baseball. Padres are getting whipped. They're two runs behind, finally, in the last inning. Down to one run behind. Bases loaded. Two out. And the batter strikes out. Do you know how I see so many fathers respond to that? Throw him out! Send him back to the minors! Oh, dude, that was disgusting. They ought to bench the guy. What do you think you're saying to your son next time he strikes out? The dad says to bench me. It's amazing how you and I treat other people will communicate to our son the basis of their acceptance. For example, with situations like been on television recently in moral situations among the Christian leaders, I hear so many people saying many disparaging remarks about it. I've seen them saying around kids everything. If I don't share a spirit of graciousness, of love, of willingness to respond if there's true repentance, forgiveness, do you know what I'm saying to my kids? You know what I'm saying to my 13-year-old daughter? Honey, if you get pregnant, boy, you better not come to me. That's what I'm saying to my daughter. Will register in my daughter's mind. It's interesting. Research shows the number one person that a teenager wants to go to about sex information is mom and dad. There's no close second. Mom and dad. Except in one situation. Some of you think here in your own lives. There's one situation where teenagers do not want to go to their parents about sex. Can anybody tell me what situation that would be in or what type of situation? Anyone here? What? When guilt is involved. When you've done something wrong. The one time a teenager does not want to go to mom and dad about sex is when guilt's involved. You know why? Because research shows the more than average parent adds to the guilt. Oh, you've hurt me. How could you have gotten pregnant? How could you have gotten her pregnant? Didn't I raise you right? Oh, what am I going to do? So one time they don't want to go to mom and dad about sex is when guilt was involved. Because they're afraid the guilt would be added instead of resolved and dealt with. And I've learned to be very, very careful about how I talk about people, especially around my children. If they see me chopping down somebody for doing something wrong, better believe me, that's registering. My kids ever do something like that, they're not going to come to me. My dad will chop me down. Acceptance. I accept you because you are created in the image of God. You are a child of infinite dignity because you're in the image of God. And I accept you as you are. Regardless of what you do, I'm for you. We'll work it through. And that gives a sense of security. And then to not exasperate our children is to show appreciation. Now in acceptance, we get a sense of security. What do you get in a sense of appreciation? When somebody comes to you, say your boss comes to you at work and say, Jack, Barbara, boy, I appreciate what you did there. Oh, that helped. Thank you so much. How does it make you feel? Significant. Through appreciation, you get a sense of significance. I'm significant. I'm someone. And it's the same thing with our children. When we show appreciation to our children, they'll walk away from us with a sense of significance. I like the one-minute manager here. There's a phrase in there that's worth the expensive price of the book. And that's this. As a manager at work, you need to constantly be trying to catch someone doing it right. I caught you! You did it right! Usually we're trying to catch someone doing it wrong. But I love it when he says, what you need to do if you're going to be an effective manager is get somebody doing it right. I caught you giving Mrs. So-and-so a hug and thanking her. We need to catch our children doing things right and expressing appreciation for it. And they'll build a sense of significance in their lives. And I have to admit, in my life so often, I've taken what my kids do right for granted. And they usually get my attention, they do something wrong. No, I can't say usually. That's not true anymore. It has been. I guarantee if I was writing a book, had a deadline, everything else, and my son did something right, wouldn't even hardly catch my attention. Did something wrong? He'd have all 360 degrees. Give a hug. Send a card. I send my kids appreciation cards. I say some things to my kids like, I'm so proud to be your daddy. Thanks for doing that. Regardless of what you do, son, I love you, but I really appreciate what you just did. I said to my son once, I said, you know, son, I know a lot of 11-year-old boys, and there's no other 11-year-old boy in the face of the earth I'd rather have as my son. I appreciate you, Sean. Boy, he just lights up, grabs, hugs. Katie, do you know, for me to be your dad, I'm one of the luckiest dads in the world. Oh, I appreciate you, Katie. Thank you for helping your mom clear the table. You know, that means so much to your mom. Thank you. Wow. I caught you doing something right. Let's catch our kids doing something right. For every negative comment, it takes 20 positive ones to offset it. For every negative time catching something to do something wrong, it takes 20 catching them doing something right to offset it. If our children live with praise, they will learn to appreciate. If our children live with praise, they'll learn to appreciate. Then after appreciation, acceptance, appreciation, the next is availability. With acceptance, you get that sense of security. With appreciation, you get that sense of significance. And then with availability, we get that sense of importance. I'm important. I'm important to my mom. I'm important to my dad. And believe me, if we are not going to exasperate our children, cause them to lose heart, we've got to be available to them. Time. Availability. Love is spelled T-I-M-E. Time. My wife kind of nailed me once when I wasn't spending time with our children. They were getting exasperated. They were losing heart. She said, honey, if we spend time with our children now, they'll want to spend time with us later. If we show an interest in them now, they'll show an interest in us later. I have so many fathers about 45, 48, 50 years old come to me. Josh, what do I do? You know, at a point, I want to spend time with my kids and they don't want to spend time with me. And almost straight across the board, when we start talking about it, they've always been so busy, they've never spent time with their kids, even wanted to hardly. But all of a sudden, when you get about 45, 48, 50, that grandfather instinct takes over. It really does. And all of a sudden, you want to spend time with your kids. But they aren't there. In the book, what would you like to say to your parents? In the essay contest we did. One after another say, well, Dad, the reason I haven't wanted to spend time with you now is you've never spent time with me in the past. It's amazing. We get married, we have children. We don't spend time with them. We spend all the time making money, building up trust funds, building up things, building up stock, to then die and leave it with people we never spent time with. Boy, there's people living on other planets. They must be using the earth as a lunatic asylum. Time. 50 years ago, the average kid had 3 to 4 hours a day. Now think of this. Just 50 years ago, the average child had 3 to 4 hours a day in interaction with a family member or an extended family, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa. 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours a day. You know what it is now, this last year? Averaged out 14 and a half minutes a day, and 12 of the 14 minutes averaged out to be in the setting of criticism and critique. 12 of the 14 and a half minutes a day. 4 years ago, 5 years ago, my wife came into my office. I was writing a book, and my son had wanted to talk to me, and I said, honey, I'm busy, I can't. She said, you know, honey, you are missing one of the great joys in life, fatherhood. And she said, you're always going to have contracts. You're always going to have deadlines. But honey, you always won't have a 6-year-old son needing your attention. Whew. Boy, was I humbled. My wife left the room. I got down on my knees. And there, I made a commitment before God that I trust never again in my life will projects be more important to me than people. Because in reality, people are more important than projects or possessions. And I made a point from then on, and my wife has helped me. I don't care if I have to cancel a deadline or what. If my children need me, they got me. And now I have an understanding with all my publishers that they know that maybe I won't be able to meet the deadlines. Because they have an understanding, my children comes before a book. Period. I thought once I made that decision, that'd be it and just go on with life. I struggle with it every day. Every day. Every day I struggle with spending time with my children. Bill Bright. Brad, his son, just went through the Julian Center, the training center we have up in where I live. And Brad said about his dad, how he's always available to him. One time Brad called home from Wheaton College and he had a problem. He said, "Dad, I just need to talk to you." And his dad, Bill Bright, said to him, "Son, do you need me to come to Wheaton?" "No, Dad, I can handle it. I just need to talk to you." "Okay." Then, a number of months after that, he called home and he said, "Dad, I need you." He said, "Son, you need me to come to Wheaton?" "Yes." Bill canceled one of the most important trips in his life. Called him up and said, "My son needs me." And he went to Wheaton. Boy, that spoke loud and clear to me. People are priority over against projects, especially your own children. What can you do? Here's some things that I try to do to give me an edge. I mean, you could be the most available father and mother in the world. Doesn't mean you're not going to have problems with your children. But it doesn't mean this. It'll give you a fighting edge. Let them stay up late at night. Often I'll talk to my wife, say, "Any exams tomorrow, school?" "No." Say, "I want to have the kids stay up an extra hour a night." Or maybe my son or one of my daughters. And then I say, "Honey, take the phone off the hook. No interruptions." And then I got to say, "Josh, you're not going to be thinking about a book. You're going to be thinking about your son, your daughter. And for 1 hour, we do something they want to do. Be available." Sleep in the backyard. Kidnap your kid from school, according to how old they are. It doesn't matter really how old they are. Kidnap them at school. I'll clear it ahead of time with the teachers, and I'll say, "Look, I'd like to kidnap, school gets out at 2:40, I'd like to kidnap my daughter and my son at 1:40. And the reason I want to is I just want to go out and have 1 hour of uninterrupted time with him or with her." And then you say, "Now, are there any exam, anything he'll be missing?" In all the years I've done it, I've never had one teacher say no. I have found that teachers would do anything to get a parent, especially a father, spending time with his kid. They'll beg you to do it. And I'll walk right in, pick them up, and walk out. And go down and get some yogurt or something. Eat it now, wear it later. In writing the Why Wait book, I had to put about 18 hours a day into it for 6 weeks. My daughter came down with the flu. And Dottie came out to our guest room and she said, "Honey, you're missing an opportunity." I said, "What do you mean?" "Why don't you come in and I'll put your meal tonight at dinner on a tray and just go in and just sit on the floor. You don't even have to," she's so sad, "just sit on the floor for a half hour, hour. Just be there with her." I never thought of that on my own, but thanks to my wife. So she did it, went in. Well, my daughter was sick with the flu, but she rolled over and faced me. And I can honestly say, fathers, I had probably the most meaningful conversation I've ever had with my daughter. Because that day at school, they discussed drugs. And they had to answer the question, "What would you do if you were in the bathroom, other kids were in there taking drugs, and the teacher walked in and the other kid said you had been taking drugs, and they had to write a one-page paper? How would you answer that?" So I said, "Honey, what'd you write?" She said, "I'd put on there, I'd tell him I didn't do it." And then she said, "If they didn't believe me, then I would say, if the life that I have lived and the way I've conducted myself around school does not say to you that I wouldn't take drugs, then it really doesn't matter what you think, because my daddy will believe me." I said, "You didn't take drugs, did you?" Then, some things I try to do in being a father and being available and things with the kids is I try to think up things that I always wanted to do with my dad, but he never let me. You ever had that? You ever had something you wanted to do with dad and he just wouldn't let you? Oh, no. You ever want to have a balloon fight with your dad? A water balloon fight? Oh, ooh, yeah. My dad would never let me. So we were up in Northern California for an Easter sunrise service, and we were at home and they had two kids. I said, "Kids, how'd you like to have a water balloon fight?" "Really?" "Yeah, with me." "With you?" "Yeah." We went down and got 150 balloons. They even have balloons now made for water. Have you ever tied 150 balloons around your finger and tied the knot? It looks like that. We went and we filled them all with water, tied them up. And then we got the garden hose out and put it in a big circle. And the five kids stood around the outside. I got in the center. We had a few rules to the game. They could only throw one balloon at a time. And the moment the balloon broke, whether I caught it, threw it back, hit them or what, the moment the balloon broke, somebody else could throw another one. Every time they hit me, they got a quarter. But if I caught the balloon and hit them back, they had to give me a nickel back. I mean, fathers, mothers, what a time. For 45 minutes, we laughed, we cried, everything. And then after we ran out of balloons, all five of them ran over and jumped on me, and we rolled in the grass, and finally my son said, "What else did you want to do with your dad?" Want to spend some time with your child and get some good conversation? Walk around a block with her. Backwards. I'm serious. Now your neighbors will think you've gone loony. But who cares about your neighbors? You do. Walk around the block backwards with your kid. It's unbelievable. One, you laugh a little bit, and then I can share about how when you don't know where you're going, how you can trip and fall and hurt yourself, but God has given us a word to go through life so we don't have to go through life backwards. And I explain some spiritual values about knowing what is right, how to live a life pleasing to God, what I talked about this morning, as we walk around the block backwards. Your kids will never forget it. You've probably all been in a progressive dinner, right? I've been to a progressive dinner. Take your kids in a progressive dinner at fast food places. I'm serious. It's great. I know kids that go on dates doing that. It's great. Start out with a hamburger here, or salad, a hamburger over there, a glass of Diet Pepsi over here, or excuse me, Coke, a piece of pie over here. A progressive dinner at a fast food service. In fact, I'll be doing that with my 7-year-old daughter probably Wednesday or Thursday in Missouri. Then I try, every time I come home, I try to teach one of my children something new, something they've never done before, because I want them to learn from me. Not long back, I took my son and I said, "Son, how'd you like to learn how to tell pressure in a tire and everything else, how the gauges work?" He says, "Yeah, Dad, I'd love to." I said, "Let's go downtown." So we went down, and I said to the guy down the gas Chevron station at Julian, I said, "Now this is going to take me a while. Do you mind if I just park out there?" He said, "No, we're not busy." So I want everybody watched. It was unbelievable. All the maintenance people watched. And we got out and I let the air out of one tire and I got the gauge. I said, "Now the pressure comes in here and out here," and I explained what PSI means. I don't know if I was right, but he didn't know any different. And then I showed how you read it on the side of the tire and got the air and then went over and showed him the pump and how it pumps it down through underneath the pavement and everything else. Next thing I turn around, he's letting the air out of the front tire. And he wanted to try it. But my son learned how to use the gauge, everything else, for me, not someone else. I became his hero, at least in knowing how to put air in a tire. Someday he'll be a pneumatic engineer. When you go shopping, I hate shopping. I think Satan invented shopping. I really do. I really do. Satan invented it. I mean, I can tell you what I want, what I don't want, and I walk out, and 30 days later, I still like what I bought. My wife, she'll go and spend all day looking for one blouse, studying it carefully, trying everything. She'll buy it, get home. 30 minutes later, "I don't like it, I want to take it back." Uncanny. The only thing that would stop that is you pay a fee to take it back. And so I started doing this, because my kids got a little bored too. Except my 13-year-old now, she just loves to go shopping with her mother. More with me because I buy her more than her mother does. But so what do you do? Do this. I've done it in almost every shopping center here in San Diego. Take your kids, and they have places you can sit on benches, you know, in all shopping centers. And often they have the little wall behind the bench a little higher. So sit up on the wall and put your feet on the bench. Like right there, you'd be sitting in the back of the bench. And then start watching people. And have some rules here. Say, "Kids, let's see who we can find is the funniest person you see. Who's the saddest person you see? Who's the weirdest dressed? Who's the sharpest dressed? Who's the happiest person?" You say, "Why would you do that?" Well, one, it's a lot of fun. Plus, I learn about my children. What's happy to them? What's sad? What's weird? What's good? It's a great way. Plus, you don't have to go in the store shopping. Next, affection. Yes, let me move right along here. Affection. With affection, With acceptance, you get a sense of security. With appreciation, a sense of significance. With availability, a sense of importance. You men at work, let's say you have a boss and you go in, you just want to talk to your boss and he says, "Boy, I just don't have time, I'm busy, maybe next week." How do you feel when you walk away? "I'm not important. If I was only more important." Same way our children feel. Same way our children feel. The same thing as we do as adults. And then with affection. With affection, you get a sense of lovability. I'm lovable. I'm lovable. A study shows that a five-year-old, 61% of the mothers every day express verbal affection. By the time that child is nine, it goes down to only 37% of the mothers. Of the fathers, 40% express every day verbal affection to their five-year-old. By the time he or she is nine, it goes down to 24%. A physical affection, a hug, a kiss, something like that, at a five-year-old, 83% of the mothers. At 9 years old, it goes down to 49. For the father, 64% shows physical affection, a hug, a kiss, something like that, to a child at five, and only 33% to a child at nine. It should actually go the other way. By the time they become a teenager, they need it more. I mean, say, "Yeah, I'm going to hug my teenager." A lot of them run home and want to hug their teenager. No, no. Well, it comes as a lifetime relationship. Oh, keep hugging. Keep expressing it. A little hug, a kiss. I was taking my son down to a baseball game, and we had the baby seat in the center. The baby wasn't there. And just the two of us, and we were talking, and finally I just drove along and reached over and just tapped him on the shoulder a little bit. And he looked over, and I winked, and I said, "Love you." He said, "I love you, Dad." And then we just went on talking. A little hug, a little wink, a little kiss here, a little touch in the car. Our kids are crying out for love. We were in Hollywood where I was having some meetings, and we had a rented van, one of these caravans, and we hired a taxi driver who knew Hollywood quite well to drive our van to take us on a tour. And my Katie, my seven-year-old, said, "Daddy, why don't you write a book about our family?" I said, "Well, honey, I don't think I have enough hours logged in that to do that yet." And I said, "We got a lot to learn as a family." But then I thought, I got an idea. I said, "If I wrote a book in the family, what should we call it?" She looked over and she said, "The Love Family." Immediately, the cab driver started crying. He spoke up. He said, "Young lady, if I wrote a book about my family, it'd be called The Hate Family." And then for about 15, 20 minutes, he just shared how there's never any love and affection in their family, and the hatred and the bitterness and the arguing, the fighting. Boy, my kids, every one of them within 10 minutes was over to my seat giving me a hug. Affection. And then have fun. Have fun with our kids. Ecclesiastes 3 says there's a time to laugh. A time to laugh. I want to have fun with my kids. I'm going to save the rest of the talk for next year. I still got 5 pages. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Husbands, love your wives. You say, "Josh, well, I've blown it." No, you haven't. It's never too late. It's never too late with God. It's never too late. You can start right where you are. You say, "Well, a lot of things that you talked about tonight was for younger children." That's right. My kids are younger. But the principle remains the same. Acceptance, appreciation, availability, affection, having fun. The principle is the same. You can use your own creativity to how do you apply to your child's age. But it's never too late. Never too late. I've seen some of the most beautiful turnarounds in a family because all of a sudden they started showing unconditional acceptance. You got a rebellious teenager, and that's when most people come to me. They got a rebellious teenager. And almost every time when I talk, not all the time, but all when I talk to them, they never spent time with them before. And he can't understand it. So you know one of the first things I say to someone like that? I'll say, "Look, suspend the rules." "What? I can't do that." "Are the rules working?" "No." "Then suspend them." For the most part, not to anarchy. Remember this phrase, rules without relationships lead to rebellion. Rules without relationships lead to rebellion. Teens respond to relationships. Why do you think at certain ages all of a sudden peers really become powerful in a child's life? Why? Because their peers will listen to them, spend time with them, do things with them. Teens respond to relationships.